When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey everyone, welcome to Screen Talk. I am starting us off today with my co-host, who is
Eric Cohn.
But this is our last podcast. This is the last one, and we were we knew it last week, but we couldn't talk about it because the announcement hadn't gone out yet. But now the announcement is out. Eric is joining Harmony Korine's new company, which I don't know how to pronounce. Do you know how to pronounce it?
You'll get it. It's called Edgelord. It's a Florida-based design and media company that will be producing both films, games, other kinds of entertainment, and I've accepted a role there as the head of development and strategy for the feature films. I think our editor-in-chief, Dana Harris, put it best when she said, outside of working at IndieWire, there is no more Eric Cohn kind of opportunity. I was very happy working at IndieWire for almost 17 years and was not, in some ways I kind of felt like I couldn't see the world not working here. But Harmony and I have been friends and colleagues for a long time. I had a book project on him quite a while back, and I admire his work. And I've also really been invested in the future of film as an art form. And my hope is that this opportunity is a pathway for that. So it came along and it just felt like too good of a moment to embrace the opportunity. But it's also incredibly bittersweet because of my time at IndieWire and especially my time with you here on Screen Talk. And because, you know, I've said it before, but I mean, you've been a friend and a mentor to me in so many different ways. And even when we argue and interrupt each other, I feel like I'm learning something. So,
It was a pleasure. It was a pleasure being irritated by you, Eric. But no, I love you. I care about you, and I lean on you in many ways that you don't even realize. So I'm going to miss you. I'm going to miss you quite a bit. And you've come, you know, it's interesting to see how you've grown over the course of the time that you were. I mean, when I first saw you, we were up at Sundance and you were sleeping on a sofa. You know, I think we were in the Snag Film, condo. Yeah. And you were writing reviews, you know, you were hustling. And I remember having conversations with people there. You know, Eric should be on full time. Eric, we need a full time critic, you know, and we made a big fuss about that. Yeah. And made a big fuss at Cannes. I remember that, too, where we said to the people at IndieWire and at Cannes, we need that person that is recognized as the critic for IndieWire. And it made a big difference. Yeah.
It did. You and others really advocated for allowing me to have that pathway. But I remember back then what was so surreal for me was just like being right out of college, essentially. You know, I'd been doing freelancing for a few years then, but it still felt like I was so green and people were willing to have me in the room. You know, like that was such a specific thing to indie. I didn't get that when I approached other publications.
But I understood. I mean, one of the things you and I talked about today that's in the story that went up on the site on Wednesday, one of the things that you know, we all belong. There's a whole group of us that belong to a club. It's a club of cinephiles, people who care about movies, people who really, really want movies to thrive and the independent cinema to thrive. And you are embracing, I think it's very exciting, some of the opportunities that are going to come your way with this new company. As you look at emerging filmmakers and some of the different ways that they can put their films into a different context. I think that's exciting. I mean, for all we know, you're the one who's going to figure out the next iteration of how to get these movies made and surfaced and find audiences for them. That's, for all we know, it's no longer, you know, we do know that it's no longer just theatrical.
Yeah, I mean, look, let's manage expectations for now about what this next chapter will bring. I'm looking forward to getting deeper into it and learning more about it and also telling you and others about it, as because I'm going to be around. I'm going to festivals. I'm going to Venice this week. I'll be at Toronto. I'll be around other places. I'll be in LA a good amount. So, you know, we'll have plenty of time to catch up. I mean, I always felt like IndieWire was this open-ended proposition. You know, our pal Eugene Hernandez is still very much on our call sheet. So it's not like when you leave,
it'll be the same. It'll be the same. And we're all still members of that fraternity, if you like.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
So anyway, I love you and I'm going to miss you. And we don't know. I mean, next week in Telluride, we're going to do the pod. I mean, this week, the week we're talking now, we're going to finish this podcast with my colleague, Marcus Jones. And we'll talk about the films that we've seen there in Telluride. And then the following week, we'll be in Toronto and we're going to do a Toronto Live screen talk with an industry guest to be announced. And then after that, we're going to try out some more people from IndieWire and see who becomes the next partner in crime.
All I can say is I'm going to be listening. I mean, to be totally frank, I always thought of this podcast as just a platform for us to exchange the kind of ideas we can't in any other context. And it's been an amazing excuse to just catch up with you each week. But I remember we were at the Seattle International Film Festival and you had been doing another podcast that ended. And I was like, wow, I have an excuse to get Ann to do a podcast with me. Like it was that sort of moment where I was like, this could actually be a thing. And I had no idea that we would make it, you know, 9+ years and almost, you know, 450 episodes. So keep it going because it's obviously something worth doing. And I know other people in the industry.
Yeah, definitely continue to do what we, I think, do best, which is really about bringing people up very quickly on what's happened in the past week and what's going on and what we've seen and what we're learning and you know, giving everyone the lay of the land of what's happening in our world. And I think that is what we do best. I mean, if there's anything else that you think we should be doing, be sure to let me know.
I know where to find you and I will find you constantly. Trust me on that.
All right. Well, thank you, Eric, and best of luck. I know you're going to kill it.
Thanks, Ann. Cheers, everybody.
Good morning. We are in Telluride, Screen Talk, first edition, without Eric Cohn, who we will miss dearly. Marcus Jones, our wonderful awards editor, is here with us.
It's nice to see you.
So we are here together in Telluride, but we opted to do a Zoom thing just because we both have to run off after this.
Yes.
And we have a full day. Yesterday was day one, and we got off to a great start with the lovely usual annual brunch up on top of the mountainside. Now, this is your second go around with Telluride, yep. Marcus, but it was fun. I mean, I got to see what's one of the interesting things about it is the idea that there's all these people who got waivers, basically. So
right.
Someone like Louis-Dreyfus was actually there for this movie Tuesday, which we haven't seen yet.
Yeah. Oh, geez. I'm surprised I missed her. But yeah, I feel like mostly I saw filmmakers, but slowly throughout the day, I had started spotting different actors that were in town. I believe you saw Emma Stone.
I didn't get her to report that she's here.
Oh,
trying to fly under the radar, apparently.
I'm sorry, though.
She's supposedly here with Poor Things, but won't be doing any press.
At Saltburn, I was getting popcorn, and the person in front of me turned, and it was Dakota Johnson. So that was exciting to see. But yeah, did you enjoy your time at the brunch?
Always great. I mean, it's almost overwhelming, you know, because you're running around. You see the usual suspects, the Sony Pictures Classics people like Michael Barker and Tom Bernard. They were there with their movie Teacher's Lounge, which is building up a lot of buzz. And it's the German entry for the Oscars, which I saw. And it's actually extraordinary. It is worthy of all that. But I talked to the director and the producer and the actor and at the brunch, and it was one of those movies that nobody had any expectations for. It's a story about a teacher in a school. Things happen and things get worse, and you know, it has one of those tension ratcheting kind of stories that you don't know where it's going to go. And it's very contemporary and very scary in a way. And that's, I think, why it hit so well in Germany, but it played well in Berlin. And now it's hitting the fall circuit. So we'll see what happens. Very happy to see Jimmy Chin and Chai Vassarhelyi, who are here with their little kid. You know, he was there. And John Batiste did a concert last night, which I couldn't get to, for American Symphony.
So sad to have missed it. Yeah.
Matthew Heineman's movie. Who did you enjoy hanging out with there?
My sort of two big conversations were, I guess, to see Jeff Nichols, who surprisingly is here for the first time. I feel like if you've seen his work, you would imagine that
It's interesting that Julie Townsinger is discovering him. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. And especially with this film, The Bike Riders, which we'll get to. But yeah, he specifically was kind of asking the group I was with, like, hey, like, had you seen Jodie Comer before? And we had all kind of seen, like, we all cop to the first season of Killing Eve, but maybe not the concluding season of Killing Eve. But he had already cast her, but told us that he was so blown away by her performance in Prima Facie, which had a run in London, had a run in New York, that he was like, oh, wow, like, I really made the right decision.
I saw that play, and she's amazing in that play, and she's amazing in the movie. The movie is a real actor tour de force. I've been a Jeff Nichols fan for a long time. He's a quiet filmmaker. He isn't usually noisy. And so this is a very noisy movie for him, you know, with a lot more action. He has Michael Shannon coming back. He's worked with him before. It's really a three-hander with Tom Hardy and Jodie Comer and Austin Butler, who I can look at all day long.
I feel like the film very much like frames it that way.
Yeah.
It is kind of Austin Butler as eye candy. Though I love that you call it loud, because I do think ultimately both Tom Hardy and Austin Butler are playing kind of like stoic characters, where the bikes do more talking than they do.
The violence. Yes. That's really what it's. These are people who can barely talk. And yet Tom Hardy does better with the talking than Austin Butler. But this is a movie that is oddly structured. It's not really conventional in terms of its narrative drive. And I'm curious to see how audiences are going to respond. The critics are back and forth on it. Now, you saw two other films last night. I went to the Wim Wenders tribute. It was a lovely thing. It was his old friend Werner Herzog, who's 3 years older than he is, gave him the silver medal, pulled it out of his pocket like it was a pocket watch, and put it over his neck.
He's probably used to it by now. He's got a theater named after him.
He got it back in the day from Tom Luddy. But these guys have been friends, you know, their whole careers, their whole lives. And the affection between them was so palpable, and they were so happy to be up there and telling little stories. And Raj Roy from the Museum of Modern Art did a little Q&A with Wim. But the movie was Anselm, which was a 3D portrait of the artist that played at Cannes. So some of us are doing a little Cannes catch up here at Telluride, because, you know, I wasn't there. I didn't see this movie. And it's a very beautiful, extraordinary portrait. You see it's in 3D. So you see these spaces, these enormous spaces that the artist is working in with all his machinery and his, he's burning things and dousing things and pouring liquid metal on things, you know, with all these cranes, and, you know, it's astonishing. But at the same time, it's also very, it's intellectual, and it deals with a lot of German history and philosophy and literature that maybe more than an American audience can handle. So we'll see how it does here.
Yeah. Did those technical aspects like really hit you? Because I had heard like 6K or something like that. I didn't even know that there were that many Ks in terms of like
I'm not sure what they were showing us at the Opera House.
Yeah.
By the way, you could hear an air conditioner going the whole time. So the tech aspects of the Opera House are not always up to par. But I would say the other one, Perfect Days, which is in Japanese, is today. Mm-hmm. So we'll see how that goes. But you saw the two hot tickets last night. Tell us about it.
Right. So my other, I'm going in reverse order, but my other story from the brunch was that I chatted with Emerald Fennell a little bit. And she had one, she was talking about her time at Oxford University. And the one line that stood out as she was talking, because she's so charming, was like, it's a place you love so much, but it'll never love you back. And I do think that that kind of vibe is very fitting of Saltburn, which does, I'd say, like the first third is at Oxford, as you see Barry Keoghan's character really pursuing Jacob Elordi. And you can't quite tell in which way. Does he want to be his friend? Does he want to date him? Does he want to be him? Like I said, she's so charming, so nice in person. What a sick individual. This film is wild. Like, there's stuff in the early that definitely made my jaw drop, but there's one part at the end where I was like, oh, okay, you guys really just did it now. I definitely don't know if I was expecting that or ever wanted to see that.
What's interesting is to watch the reaction to the film and the reviews, and they are all over the place. It sounds like it's I've heard words from silly, you know. It doesn't sound like an Oscar movie though, does it?
I think visually it is really stunning. I mean, the production design is pretty next level. It is like an absolutely beautiful castle setting with each a distinctive room that they make a joke of in the film. Jacob Elordi gives a very half-committed tour, and he's really fun in this. But yeah, I'd say that Barry's performance is challenging, and I think that people will either really want to embrace it or be maybe a little bit put off. But Rosamund, I think every person who goes into that movie will leave an even bigger fan of her. And so I'd say she, maybe even more than Barry Keoghan, has the best chances. But I also think that there's a lot of craft potential.
Well, so you have costumes and production design and all that kind of thing, because it's a period piece, right?
Right.
Okay. So how about Rustin?
I so enjoyed Rustin. I'm a big Colman Domingo fan. We've talked before about how I'm a fan of Euphoria, yes. But he's done plenty of other work. I've even seen Fear the Walking Dead, which he was on for most of it. I think it's ending soon, but I feel like those shows always have like three different things called the final season. But anyway, this is a departure for him. He plays the black gay political activist that had a real beautiful working partnership with Martin Luther King, and the film really explores that and it kind of like fills the gaps, because I think everyone has the idea of the March on Washington and the speech Dr. King gave. But to see the actual details of how it came together and the people, even within the Black community, that were pushing against Rustin's pursuits to have this all sweeping, biggest peaceful protest there's been in America is just really enjoyable. And Colman completely carries it through. He's so quick-witted and really pulls no punches against all his scene partners. And the film is built around him, but one of the delights of it is every new unexpected guest performance that you see in it. Because even the names that have been mentioned, whether it's Audra McDonald, or I think it's known that Chris Rock is in the film, there's going to be another actor that you recognize that is a complete joy to see in this.
Oh, that that makes it me really want to see it. So of course, what's going on here at Telluride is that all these things are programmed back to back and across from each other. You know, there's five things going on, if not more, all at the same time. So you and I have a big day ahead of us, a lot of packed schedule full of interviews and movies. And I'm going to run off to a movie right now, which is Perfect Days. And then I'm going to see Zone of Interest, which is the another Cannes movie, which I can't wait to see. And Sandra Hüller is here with that, and Anatomy of a Fall, which won the Palme d'Or. So I've seen that one. So I'm going to talk to her, which I'm excited about. I'm going to talk to vendors, and I'm going to be talking to Jeff Nichols for Francine Maisler, the casting director.
I love that. Yeah.
Tell us what you've got on your schedule, on your docket.
I've got Wildcat, directed by Ethan Hawke and starring his daughter Maya Hawke as Flannery O'Connor. I have The Holdovers, which is one we didn't mention, but that was one of the premieres yesterday. That was big. Alexander Payne's new movie about kind of a teacher student, and I think another maybe like a lunch lady played by Divine Joy Randolph. But I'm really excited.
Stuck over the holidays, and she's there.
Yeah,
and it's Paul Giamatti, and I think there's a student there who's supposed to be good in it. Yeah,
yeah, and then I definitely think later I'll see All of Us Strangers, the Andrew Haig movie with Andrew Scott and Paul Mescal. Yeah. That's the one that I've really been hearing is like the must. You have to see it, and so hopefully I get to it tonight. I was so sad. That was the main one out of like the five things playing at the same time that I was sad I couldn't make it to.
Same here. I got to catch up with The Holdovers as well. And Poor Things is coming up on the schedule, coming in here from Venice. Next week, Screen Talk is going to be in Toronto, and we're going to have a special guest, an industry guest, which I'm very excited about. I'll be doing that, just me and him. I can't say who it is yet because it isn't completely confirmed.
And you have to tell me off camera. Yeah.
Yeah, really. And then in New York, we'll try a Screen Talk with one of the New York team, Ryan Latanzio, when he's back from Venice. So, you'll be back on too, as soon as I get back to LA, I'm sure. All right. See you soon.
Looking forward to it, and looking forward to seeing you later today. Have a great day at Telluride.
You too.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.